The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Nick Langworthy, the chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Welcome back, Chairman Langworthy. Always great to hear the other side of things. Thanks for being here.
Well, it's great to be here. Merry Christmas, Alan.
Oh, thank you
very
much.
Happy holidays.
I appreciate that very much. Okay, let's start with the obvious. Trump has been impeached by the House. Your reaction and the latest news about the Pelosi strategy before the Senate trial.
Well, if there's some breaking strategy this morning, I haven't heard it. I mean, this, I believe, has sealed the president's reelection. The far left is giddy that they've impeached the president. They don't have a snowball's chance in hell of removing the president from office. There's going to be no defections that I can tell. And they're dragging this out. And the American people know that this is for nothing. This will not change the trajectory of our government other than slow it to an absolute halt with no business going in front of the Senate for a month, 2 months, Lord only knows how long. The House of Representatives has accomplished nil in just the last, 2 months that they've been in, considering this impeachment. What is it for? We are in the middle of a presidential election. And if you're running for president right now, how can you look at this and say, oh, this is good for my campaign, for me to get my message out? All this has done is stolen all of the thunder from the Democrats running for president.
So why is Trump, if you're right, and you're the chairman of the what we could only call the beleaguered Republican Party in New York State, why is Trump so unpopular with his fellow New Yorkers?
We're a state that's just 3 million more Democrats than Republicans. This is a hyper-partisan time, a time where we are in great polarization. He's running about where Republican presidents have run in the state of New York. I mean, I don't remember the Bush years being a great boom time for Republicans in this state. I mean, a Republican president, is not going to, in all likelihood, carry New York unless he's going to carry 49 or 50 states. But it doesn't mean that his support levels in critical areas of the state aren't really important. But, we're not playing for electoral votes here.
Well, I hear you, but I do want to ask you whether or not the fate of the Republican Party in New York State is somewhat tied to Trump. So, for example, we are now seeing a lot of Republican senators quitting the state Senate. How come?
I don't think it has anything to do with national politics. I mean, there's a great deal of these senators are conditioned to be members of a majority party. They're conditioned to introducing bills that get voted on and get passed into law. They are, in many ways, some of them are spoiled from times gone by. The minority, after one session, didn't just lose by a little. They lost by a lot. They, we went from 32 to 31 in the majority to 40-23 in the minority. It was a cataclysm. The election of 18 had great consequences. And now you have members, some up in age, some that have other opportunities to serve other ways, some that, have just said to me, I've done my 30 years in service Albany. It's time for me to try a new challenge in my life. Minority service is not the same. And, some don't want to serve in a minority. So I think that is what you're seeing more than I haven't had one of them say, I'm afraid of the president or I'm afraid of national politics or national waves. In fact, if you look in 2016, it was a much better year for You know, when Trump was on the ballot, it was a much better year for Senate Republicans than was a wave midterm.
Do you try to talk them out of quitting when they quit?
There's certain members you find out ahead of time. Some of them don't want to be cajoled, so they just get the announcement out and call you after the fact. I mean, you know, most of that discussion is, you know, they call their legislative leader and the leadership team in the Senate. And, you know, some I've talked to before they've made their announcements. They just wanted to give me the polite heads up. But, you know, I'm still fairly new in this position. And, you know, there's some of the members that I haven't spoken to that I just didn't have necessarily the relationship with. I think there's an opportunity here. I mean, I look at it, you know, it's time in many ways as we're transitioning the Republican Party. This is an opportunity for us to find younger, more aggressive people to serve in the state legislature, not those that are conditioned from time gone by, but those that are willing to pick up, join the fight, and, you know, work hard to create two-party government in the state of New York, because that's what we owe the taxpayers.
Are you finding it difficult to recruit people to take their places, the seniors who are graduating out, phasing out?
I don't, actually. We've had a number of young, you know, people that either come from another level of government, or perhaps they're people that were just supportive, you know, players within Republican politics, have decided that they wanted to go and be part of, you know, the fight and go and try to represent the constituents to the best of their ability. So I think you'll see in the weeks, in months to come, as we roll these candidacies out, I think you will see a younger generation of people stepping up to serve.
And do you think that's helpful to you and what you're trying to do with the Republican Party?
Well, you certainly are always looking to bring more youth and vitality. I mean, it's the one thing that became abundantly clear to me as I campaigned to be chairman. I mean, I went to too many rooms where I was the youngest person at 38. We need to find, and not every 38-year-old is politically as wired as I understand that. But we need to recruit younger people throughout the structure of our political party and throughout our government to serve, because, you know, the state, you know, we've certainly got people that have paid their dues and done their time. And, you know, if they want to continue to serve, that's wonderful. But when you're going to recruit the future, you want it to truly be the future.
And Nick Langworthy, how are you doing on money? Now, we know that Governor Cuomo is a money machine.
Well, he sells the government, so it's very easy for him to be the government.
What do you mean by that? What
do
you mean
by that? Machine. Well, I mean, the special interest money that he takes into his campaign account. Here's someone that's raised over $100 million during his tenure as governor. I mean, there's, you know, I think those people, you know, that are answering subpoenas in the federal government in so many of these circumstances, you know, they made big contributions. And they got an awful lot of things from New York state government. So we're going to have a lot to say about that in the year ahead, because this governor, to come out and talk about how he's the one that wanted to take big money out of politics, I mean, that is one of the most laughable things that's ever been uttered. I mean, he is big money in politics. He is the personification of big money in politics. And, you know, he may not sell the government, but he certainly rents it or leases it out.
So when he, for example, when he was surrounded by a couple of guys who are on their way to jail, if not in jail now, there are those people who think that he was in it. The U.S. attorney at the time said, nope, we're not indicting him, but we're indicting those people who were very close to him. Did you suspect anything was wrong with that?
Well, what you have here is just one of the carefulest politicians we've ever known. He has a master's degree in politics that he earned at alongside his father. You know, what a great apprenticeship program that he participated in to learn the office of governor from a three-term governor, where he doesn't put much in writing, is my understanding. He doesn't send text messages. He has used his BlackBerry function on his, called a PIN message, which is device to device, rather than creating a paper trail. I mean, these are things that will prevent people from having the evidence that implicates them in situations like this. So I think he understands, just like you see in episodes of shows about organized crime, how to cover his trail pretty well. Now, I look at the situation in front of J. Cope right now, well, this is, you know, he's got a cover-up to the nth degree going here right now.
Now, wait. Nick Langworthy, explain what J. Cope is to our listeners.
Yeah, J. Cope is the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, and he obviously has the lion's share of the appointments to that, along with Speaker Hastie and Andrea Stewart-Cousins now. But, you know, there's a cover-up going on in that body where, you know, he was not happy with some of the votes coming out of some of those members, and that information got leaked to his administration. And now, you know, there's a – it's almost like watching the Three Stooges. Everybody's pointing in the other direction, and this is not going to go away. We are going to be on the trail. We are going to point this stuff out, and I think – it's a situation where we may just have to get some local law enforcement involved in it, because it's certainly the state government under Letitia James is AG, and J. Cope is, you know, a sad, toothless tiger. We don't have an entity that's policing our government. We have no, you know, enforcement of public ethics and integrity. And I think, you know, we may have to call on some district attorneys to get involved, if not federal prosecutors. So more of that to come in the new year.
Are you hinting that you know something that we don't know?
There's an awful lot of evidence out there. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. What do you think about Nancy Pelosi and her relationship with this president?
I think that what's gone on in the last 2 months is an embarrassment. I mean, this is a president that came into office. He wanted to do great deals. I mean, I don't believe that this president wanted to go in and serve as a hyper-partisan president. He wanted to go and get big league projects done. You know, a major infrastructure deal could have been had. Sadly, you know, his signature accomplishment, the tax reform, was only done, you know, with Republican votes for the most part. We're in just such a hyper-partisan, polarized environment. The Democrats can't cooperate with the president without being seen as traitors to their own. And you watch these members of Congress in New York, whether it be Brindisi in 22 or Antonio Delgado or Max Rose, you know, they campaigned as moderates. They campaigned as solutions oriented, you know, members of Congress trying to be there in the era of Trump. Now, what do you have? You have people that have followed the partisan flock, which is not even led by Pelosi. Pelosi seems like a moderate next to AOC in the squad. They're intimidated. They're scared to death that the Act Blue money that helped them get elected nationally, this Act Blue was a network of liberal followers around the country, that would dry up if they had the audacity to vote against the impeachment. First, they all fell off the cliff and followed the lemmings and voted for the impeachment inquiry. And now, last night, they all voted to impeach the President of the United States, something they pledged to not be going to Washington to do. So we see the hypocrisy. We see people that are in districts that the president won in 2016 out there trying to find his removal from office. And they're going to pay a hellish price at the ballot box in 2020 when the voters that brought them to office have an opportunity to vote them out of office.
So are you referring specifically to people like Congressman Delgado, Congressman Brindisi, all of whom I've interviewed many times? They seem to think they did the right thing, and you think that they did the unpolitical thing that will cost them their offices, and you're running ads.
We absolutely are going hard at them. They don't serve the constituents that represented them. Max Rose, his district is an overwhelming Trump district, a district that elected Donald Trump with over 11% margin.
And where is
and
that?
That's Staten Island in Brooklyn.
Right.
And he went and voted for the impeachment of the president after so many times, and so many town hall meetings. He said that he wrote op-eds that this was not the right direction for the country, yet he found a way to vote for it each and every time. It is so thin, so hollow is their argument that they're taking into this, that it's a sham. And the American people are smart people. They are not dumb. They see this. They see this for what it is. It's political theater only. Only. There's no threat of the removal of the president. So what the hell are they dragging the country through this for?
Talk to me about Elise Stefanik. She's now, you know, a young heroine of the Republican Party, despised by many Democrats, but up there in the North Country, a fairly safe Republican district. What do you see in her future?
I mean, the sky's the limit for Elise. I mean, I think we've known she's a rising star for many years, or at least the last half decade or so. She was the youngest woman elected to the Congress ever before AOC. And now, you know, she's got seniority, she's got stature, and this, you know, after what went on through Schiff's nonsense and her calling Schiff to the carpet and getting such a high profile for doing so on the Intelligence Committee hearings, it's crystal clear that she's a rising star nationally. So I would say that the sky is the limit for Elise. I think she's a tremendous advocate for her district. When I talk to her, obviously I may have national politics on my mind, but she wants to always bring it back to what's going on at home. And she's someone that spends an awful lot of time campaigning throughout her district, talking to the constituents and doing the work of a true, you know, citizen representative out there, you know, helping, you know, different levels of government accomplish, solutions for the problems of the people that they represent, the hardworking taxpayers of the North Country.
Let's just say you think she's a hardworking person and a rising star. What if she loses in the next election? Would that surprise you?
I don't think there's any scenario where the message in Washington, D.C. from the far left that Tedra Cobb, her opponent, represents, will be a message that's bought by the people in the territory, in her district, in the northern, you know, the Adirondack Mountains, in the North Country of this state. I've spent many hours traveling that turf, and, you know, I don't think culturally, you know, you have people that buy into socialism or, you know, the extreme nanny state government, you know, solutions that are being put forward to problems that don't exist. By Tedra Cobb and other of these quote-unquote progressive candidates, they're not going to buy what she sells. I mean, the same candidate, you know, in what was a very difficult midterm election that didn't have the momentum of the president on the ticket, she got shellacked by 18 points or 14 points, so, you know, at least one and one big. She takes her district seriously. She's out working all the time. I just don't see a scenario where, you know, she is going to lose this election no matter how much liberal special interest money comes in.
Let's talk a little bit about the $6.1 billion deficit that the state now faces. How should the state take the pain?
Well, I mean, we have to look at ourselves here. This is what's so hard when you have one-party rule. You have all of the, you know, it's being driven by the fringe of the Democratic Party, the extreme left. They're in the leadership, all those extreme left members that are replace the IDC members in primaries. I mean, they have things that they want to propose in this legislative session that the governor knows he has no way to pay for. I mean, you have people that will out there be fighting for Medicaid for all and the elimination of private health insurance just for New York State. I mean, they want to take all these big ideas that come out of the extremists in Washington and actually pass them into law in New York, make us the liberal testing ground. But the real fundamental problem, you look at New York's Medicaid program, and it's not sustainable. You have we as a state opt into every single possible reimbursable program. We spend more on the program than Texas and Florida combined, even though they are more than double our population. Those states are growing in population, in economy, and no one dies in the streets of lack of health care in those states. Yet somehow in New York, where we're hemorrhaging population, it costs so much more. And, you know, if the governor had a brain, he would look to what other states are doing and try to emulate that. I mean, I'm told that if New York just adopted California's Medicaid program, not exactly a dark red state, I mean, this is the bluest of the blue, if we just adopted their program, we'd save billions every year.
Okay, so who you got to run against Andrew Cuomo? So far, you've failed miserably three times. He's been elected.
I haven't failed once, pal.
Well, your party.
I just got started.
But your party.
And we are rebuilding the party.
So Nick
that
Langworthy.
Is our destination, Alan.
So Nick
that
Langworthy.
That is our destination in 2022.
So Nick Langworthy.
I don't recruit candidates through the press. I don't recruit my candidates through the press. So you're never going to hear me give you a laundry list of people so that you could sit there and peck away at them one by one. I will tell you this. We work every damn day to make sure that we are building this party so that we can get to our ultimate goal, which is to defeat this corrupt governor in 2022. And everything's on the table, from the private sector to the public sector to people that have been in office that have never even considered running for office. It's all on the table. I'm traveling all over this state. I am meeting with people on a constant basis, and this is a topic of conversation.
Okay.
So we got a lot of runway between now and then. And I'll just rest assured that work's being done.
Okay. So, Chairman Nick Langworthy, a year-long investigative piece in the Albany Business Review about how Cuomo used public-private partnerships to help revitalize upstate New York and how it failed. And the headline, Albany was winning the game, then Cuomo changed the rules. The region was building a world-class nanotech cluster, then Governor Andrew Cuomo tried to spread the wealth. What do you make of that?
I think his economic development policies in upstate New York have been atrocious. I mean, you look at this 1.2 million square foot boondoggle in Buffalo my God, I hope Tesla succeeds. I pray that Tesla succeeds and brings really good paying jobs to my backyard. But none of us know how many people work there. They got paid a fortune to do it, and really, even the local media, which were nothing but a bunch of cheerleaders for this, have kind of resolved themselves to the fact that this is a boondoggle and this is going to end badly, because you're trying to sell solar panels for roofs that, you know, we may or may not, you know, have a market for. I mean, solar energy is not exactly exploding in the marketplace. You've got these shingles that they haven't been able to get out to market. And Elon Musk seems to be very distracted with many other projects than this solar boondoggle in Buffalo, New York. So that's one example. Look at the film studio in Syracuse. I mean, millions and millions of dollars that we don't have to spend squandered on these ridiculous ideas. He went and got the headline when he was, you know, seeking one of his elections. Got the local elected officials to all stand there and clap for him, got the pictures, but then it took off. And these things just have collapsed in on themselves. There's very, very few success stories. And, you know, back to that $6.1 billion deficit, Alan, this is happening to us in a time of great economic success nationally. What is going to happen to New York?
Wait, there's a huge deficit. Wait, Nick, there's a huge deficit in the federal government, too. You know that.
Talking about the economy in receipts. I mean, tax receipts are high because people are working and the economy is on fire. What is going to happen to New York if we have a recession and those receipts diminish? We're going to collapse in on ourselves.
Okay, I want to talk to you about the Public Financing Commission. Well, I think it's a great idea that people, not only people with money, get a chance to run. And you?
I think that, I mean, one, I don't personally support publicly financing elections, but I'm big enough to realize that they have enough votes to pass their program. I don't know why their political courage didn't exist to just take this on as a legislature, you know, to through the Assembly and the Senate and the governor, you know, come up with your plan, vote on it in the light of day in the chambers, and the governor put it on the governor's desk for signature.
And what about
everything has to be a shell game in some sort of charade, which is what we've had time and again and again and again. So we have this commission led by Jay Jacobs. So you've got a fox running the hen house. They come up with something that, you know, is really tough to get your head around as to how it's actually going to impact us. We're not going to see it until 2024, long after the next governor's election. And it really doesn't take the big money out of politics.
But wait. I want to ask you, because I only got 2 minutes left here, Nick. One of the things that this commission has come up with is a program that will basically kill third parties. Are you for that or against it? In other words, should the
I support fusion.
Yes.
I support fusion. The spirit of this commission was that it didn't have anything to do with ballot fusion. they added this in. This was the governor's backdoor way to go get vindication and to take revenge out on the Working Families Party, which had the audacity to go against him in the last election. This man never forgets. And to now require parties to receive 130,000 votes in every even-numbered year to remain ballot placeholders. My allies in the Conservative Party have done that time and again. I presume they'll continue. But I think it's going to cost a lot of parties their permanent status, whether it be, you know, those in the Libertarian or the Green. Certainly the Working Families has never received that sum of votes, or at least hasn't in recent elections. And the Independence Party's, in tough stead as well. So I think this is a way for him to settle scores, but he didn't want the pressure of having to just say, here's a bill to eliminate ballot fusion, up or down vote, yes or no. We had to have charades, games, in these little tactics. So now courts are going to get involved because you have a legislature that shirked its responsibility and handed it to an unelected commission.
Okay,
I think there's a good chance it'll get shot down.
Nick, we're out of time. I love having you on the show. While we don't agree on much, we certainly agree on that last thing.
Well, that's great. Hopefully we can join in the studio one of these days.
I hope so. We're out of time. Our guest has been Nick Langworthy, the New York chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Again, Nick, thanks so much for joining us. We so appreciate it.
Thank you.